Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. That's right. It is the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's the show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors, but we do help focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. Almost took today off, but I realized that if I had a podcast that I liked, that I would be bummed if the host took off during the lockdown when everybody's trapped in their houses. And so I'm here. And I'm clear. Get used to it. There, I made up a new one right there. Pretty cool. All right, so I have one. I think I only have one story that is not directly related to the COVID-19 pandemic, as I believe that is the current the title of it there. And should I start with that, or should I start with that? Nah, I'll start with that. Because this is just, okay, well, we go to Tulsa, Oklahoma, where KJRH reports that a woman got into an altercation at a convenience store, which that happens from time to time. That happens, right? Get into an altercation. I saw an altercation at a grocery store. I'll tell you about that in a little bit. But you get an altercation, get into a tussle, maybe you have an argument, maybe you had a disagreement with the cashier, maybe somebody cut in front of you in line. It happens all the time, right? So she gets into some sort of tussle at the convenience store, departs the store, goes and gets a gun, comes back and starts shooting into the store. At which point, an armed citizen with a concealed carry permit shot and killed her, preventing a mass shooting. The article doesn't say if anyone in the store was shot. It looks like this lady did not shoot anyone. She just shot into the store in a random fashion. And so as far as we know, this has nothing to do with the coronavirus. No, I got to say the COVID-19 pandemic. Nope. This was just an argument in a convenience store in which one of the people involved decided that murdering other people was the way she was going to vent her frustration. And this happens more and more, and I point it out more and more. And if one thing this pandemic has done, it's probably dramatically reduced incidents like this all over the country. So I guess that's one silver lining around this dark, dark, apparently, seemingly never-ending cloud. But listen to this. The urinalist who wrote this story at the end says, officials say the shooter was questioned by detectives and then released. The shooter? Really? The armed citizen who prevented the mass shooting should not be referred to as the shooter. Because we always refer to the shooter as the shooter. The shooter was the guy who shot and killed or attempted to shoot and kill innocent people. That's the shooter. But urinalists, well, they are what they are. This writer should have said the armed citizen was questioned by detectives and released because it was a justified shooting, apparently, as far as we can tell. And now this article is from 2 days ago. I go to follow up on it. There's been no follow up, not even in the local paper, not even on the local news. Can't find out anything about it because I guess there's not a lot of ratings unless you talk about the coronavirus. You have to talk about COVID-19 related articles, which we will get to because, well, you can't escape them because it's basically taken over the world. So let's start with the Reality Strikes file. We go to Massachusetts, where the governor there has bravely and boldly lifted the ban on grocery store plastic bags. That's right. Why? Because those filthy canvas bags could spread the virus or any other virus or any other bacteria or any other kind of stuff. Reusing bags to carry your groceries and food items, it's disgusting is what it is. And so it's a temporary ban, though. Don't get all excited out there in Boston. The ban on plastic bags at the grocery store is temporary. That's if this state that we're in is temporary. And I'm losing faith that this is temporary. That's just because I'm getting cabin fever. Like everybody else, you get cooped up. You know, we stay cooped up here almost all the time. But when you're told you can't go out, that changes things. And so we went to the farmer's market on Saturday because it was open. And it was wonderful. We got some fresh berries. We got some amazing tomatoes. I ate an African tamale, which I didn't even know existed. I didn't know there was a such thing as an African tamale until I went to the farmer's market with my extremely attractive audio engineer. Yes, they call it something else back there in, I believe it was Kenya or Nigeria. I can't remember. Anyway.
Ghana.
So we're walking by the stand there, and the lady says, "You want to try my tamale?" And I was like, "That's not a Mexican accent." You know, and she's black, and so I was like, "Huh, she's working it. I'm gonna go over there." I said, "I'll try your tamale." So she gave me a little bit of it, and I said, "Yep, we'll take one." And then we bought another one.
Yeah.
Yeah, see? So if you're in sales, don't be afraid to throw it out there. Come on. Because you never know. You want to try my tamale? It was very interesting. Anyway, so we had a great time at the farmer's market. And we're just not that scared, that's all. We're just not that scared. Because I've been thinking about this. Because what else you do? You sit around and think, right? Because we're trapped in the house here. For the majority of the day. But if I go out into the world to do something, I could contract a potentially deadly virus that could kill me or another person or other people. Which, by the way, is true any flu season. It's true every flu season that you could contract a strain of the flu that could be deadly to you or someone else. It's possible. Yes, it's always possible. Now, this one, we don't know about it, so it's scary. There's that. And it's definitely killing more people than the average flu because we haven't no immunity. So it's particularly a little scarier this year than most years. And so, but if I do go out there and I contract this virus that could kill me or could kill others, I may not express any symptoms and I may not infect or pass it on to anyone. That's a distinct possibility. I could experience some mild symptoms, right? That's another possibility. And then I could experience a severe case of the flu, but if that happens, there's a good chance I could ride it out at home and I could get better. I could contract an extremely serious case in which I lose the ability to breathe on my own and I go to the hospital, in which case they'll probably have a ventilator so that I won't die. And I'll recover eventually. But then there's the possibility that the hospital runs out of ventilators. I get to the hospital. They don't have a ventilator for me, at which point I still may recover. But I'm probably going to die. At which point I go to heaven and lockdown is over. So I'm just not that scared. That's all. And I don't think that the widespread panic that we've all been through was necessary at all. And I'm not so sure locking down the whole world, or at least all of the metropolitan areas of the world, I'm just not so sure it's necessary. I think we may all be fairly embarrassed by this. I don't know. All right, let's move on then. Let's
move on.
No, we can't move on, as a matter of fact. We're going to stay put. Okay. Now, the idiots in California, the criminally insane people running the government in California, up in Los Angeles, the mayor there has decided that he's going to take the vagrants and the bums out of their tents and pack them into all the recreation centers around the city. Right? Why? Because he's a genius. You know, I actually cannot comprehend why he wants to do this, except maybe it's a power trip. I don't know. Because it doesn't make any sense from an epidemiological standpoint. And the only reason I know that is not because I know anything about epidemiology. It's because I read this article in Breitbart where they quoted a CDC paper published back on March 18th, 2020, in which they pointed out that rapid person-to-person transmission of COVID-19 appears likely to have occurred in indoor settings where there's lots of people and no walls and no privacy. Hospitals, cruise ship, church, gyms, fitness centers, shared eating environments, hospitals. And so you put a whole lot of people into a building where they're bumping into each other, rubbing up against each other, and they're in close quarters, maybe coughing and sneezing on each other. You have a much greater chance of transmitting the virus. So why would you want to put the bums and the derelicts into basically giant incubators? I don't understand. You've let them sleep on the streets your entire political career, Mr. Garcetti. Why now do you want to move them inside when there's a good chance you're going to get more of them sick? For crying out loud. Just unbelievable. This paper, published by the CDC, found that the odds for transmission from a primary case patient were almost 20 times higher inside a building than in an open-air environment like where the bums live now. So the bums are probably better off in their tents under the bridge, Mr. Garcetti, where you've kept them for, or you've allowed them to pile up for however long you've been in politics. I haven't been paying that much attention to you because you're frankly not that impressive. And so I never have been impressed. And so there you go. And now from the genius, Garcetti. I don't even know his first name. It's not in the article and I can't remember it. That's how unimpressed I am with Mayor Garcetti, I guess we'll call him. We go from there into the dim new world file where we're going to check in with Extinction Rebellion. Have you heard of Extinction Rebellion? He said to his extremely attractive audio engineer. Not familiar? Mm-hmm. They think all people should die, right? So that the earth can recover. Mm-hmm. And the reason they don't kill themselves, it's not because they're hypocrites. It's because they have to go about the important work of arranging for the extinction of humanity. So that's the reason they haven't started with themselves. Anyway, one of their Extinction Rebellion East Midlands. I guess it's like a club, and they have various branches. They have branches is the word, like a bank, you know. Extinction Rebellion has a branch here and a branch there. They have one in L.A., one in Denver. They have one in East Midlands, which I would assume is in England. Branch of Extinction Rebellion out in East Midlands posted up some social media. They tweeted, as a matter of fact, to be precise, that Earth is healing. The air and water is clearing. They tweeted, Corona is the cure, humans are the disease. And then they showed stickers with that message, Corona is the cure, humans are the disease. Those stickers on lampposts around the East Midlands area. Mm-hmm. And it had the old Extinction Rebellion logo on the stickers, right? So another branch of Extinction Rebellion challenged them and said, this does not follow Extinction Rebellion's principles. And then East Midlands doubled down. They said, from the perspective of the Earth, humans behave like a disease. The idea is not to be. I'm not sure I understand that.
I don't get it.
It must be the King's English. Maybe there's something lost in translation there. I don't know. The idea is not to be. No, I think that's their goal. The idea is we, humans, should not be. The idea is not to be. The author over here at Summit.News, okay, that's the first time I've seen the dot news, okay? Summit.News, they say Extinction Rebellion East Midland, by the way, may represent the ravings of one idiot. So, in order to have a branch of Extinction Rebellion, you can be one millennial, one pasty, thin, pale millennial who hasn't left your parents' basement in weeks, even before all the lockdown. You're just down there playing video games and posting about how much you hate life and humanity and yourself and your mom and dad and everything. All right. So it may represent the ravings of one idiot, but the notion has been widely shared by environmentalists and celebrities in the wake of the current unpleasantness Actor Idris Elba. Are you familiar with Idris Elba? He asked. He's extremely attractive.
No.
No. Nor am I. This actress tested positive, and she claimed, quote, she claimed that COVID-19 was the planet, quote, reacting to the human race, quote, and said that COVID-19 was revenge for climate change. Well, I don't even know if this actress is English. Revenge for climate change. So the planet is taking its revenge upon us. Yeah. Okay. That's the Dim New World file. We'll set that aside. Now, speaking of the Extinction Rebellion, when we look into the leftist rule file, and leftists do rule. They rule the whole world, as far as I can tell. Even the conservatives are leftists anymore. So from the leftist rule file, Baltimore, the population in Baltimore, Maryland, has dropped below 600,000 for the first time in over 100 years. Wow. And that's according to official census data. The census estimates the population at 593 some odd thousand, and that's as of July 1st, 2019. Baltimore lost about 9,000 people from the previous year, and it's been trending downward for decades, according to the Baltimore Sun here. They had almost 625,000 in 2014, 6 years ago, and now they're below 600,000. And as a matter of fact, since the Freddie Gray incident in 2015, the city has experienced an annual decline every year in its population since 2015. And now none of the counties surrounding the city of Baltimore saw their population substantially decline last year, but Baltimore is cratering. You have a professor at the University of Maryland says it's a the population collapse is not reflective of the overall Baltimore metropolitan area. It's particularly acute in the city of Baltimore. And so you would think this is primarily driven by people afraid of being shot and fleeing the city. But it's also related to a decrease in the birth rate, as a matter of fact, so, which we've been covering for quite some time here at the Weekly Worldview. So I guess if you're living in Baltimore and you're fortunate enough not to get shot and killed or shot at or shot and wounded, apparently you still don't have enough hope in the future of life in Baltimore to go ahead and procreate. And I am back, and I'm glad that you have stuck through with us here. And what do I want to do? Am I going to go? Well, now, wait a second here. Let's go to Denver, Colorado, where my pastor, Bob Enyart, the host of Real Science Radio, asserts that there is no sitting governor in Colorado. He refuses to acknowledge that there is a governor in Colorado because of the obvious uncomfortable, creepy, sicko nature of what's going on in the governor's office there in California. But
California.
Did I say California? Well, Colorado's just about like California. The criminally insane are running the place. It's easy to get the two confused. It's like Detroit and Baltimore. It's easy to get them confused too. But the alleged governor there, who I will not name him, he abolished the death penalty last week in Colorado. Yes. Now,
there was a death
Yeah, well, now, Colorado had not executed a convict since 1997, by the way, and I was there. I was at the federal, it was a state penitentiary. I forget where it was, Walsenburg. It was a long drive. I was there covering the last execution in the state of Colorado. I was a reporter on the scene there. That was 1997. That was a long time ago. So it's not that the death penalty actually existed in Colorado, but the alleged person occupying the governor's office officially abolished the death penalty. And not only that, not only did he abolish the death penalty, he commuted the sentences of three murderers who all happened to attend Overland High School. I did not know that. The three Coloradans on death row all went to the same high school. There was 45-year-old Nathan Dunlap, 35-year-old Sir Mario Owens, and 34-year-old Robert Ray. Their sentences were commuted to life, ironically enough. Their victims were not allowed to experience life. They are specifically endowed with life by the power of the state, which is just sad. So I have a quote from someone, I'm not sure who it is, but I think it's the person who did this, who just commuted those sentences. That person says, quote, "The death penalty cannot be and never has been administered equitably in the state of Colorado." And he then went on to say, "I hope this decision provides clarity." It does provide insight into the mindset, the heart and mind of the author of the commutations and the repeal of the death penalty. So it does provide some clarity in that sense, Mr. Governor. I'm not sure how to. You remember Nathan Dunlap? He shot and killed four people. Seriously wounded a fifth, injured for life, when he was 19 years old at a Chuck E. Cheese in Aurora, Colorado, 1993. Owens and Ray had killed several people each. Anyway, so the thing is only the just death penalty has been repealed in Colorado. And the death penalty has now been redirected and amplified onto the citizens. That's what has actually happened. The judicious and right and just death penalty has been repealed, but death will continue to reign in Colorado, just now less restrained is what has happened there. And very sad. One more from the Justice. That was from the death penalty file, subfolder of the Justice file. This is from the Justice file. An incident took place March 19th. Joshua J. Haskell, a 42-year-old criminal out of American Fork, Utah, forcibly entered a home and using a large serrated knife, he threatened the homeowner and tied her up with shoelaces. The victim began screaming and yelling, as you can well imagine, and he told her to be quiet or he was going to cut her head off. Well, the woman's son heard the mother screaming. He called 911, and by the time the police got there, the assailant was still in the house with the woman when the police got there. He tried to make it look like they were sleeping together, but the woman jumped up out of bed and ran downstairs to the officers, screaming, panicked, terrified. Well, that man had recently been released from a halfway house because of concerns that he could contract COVID-19. And this is happening all over the country. I just read some headlines right before airtime that I didn't have time to digest. But state and local authorities are releasing criminals out into the population because of what I talked about earlier. That if you have a lot of people in a large housing area with no privacy, that they're going to get sick, which is just another reason why jail and prison, long-term jail and prison, is unjust. It should be abandoned. You should only be in jail while you're awaiting trial or while you're on trial. And at that time, if you get sick, well, too bad. because we have to protect society from criminals. That's the government has that responsibility, as well as public health. And the two have to be balanced. And we shouldn't be releasing criminals into the general population of America. I shouldn't say general population. I think that's a prison term. We shouldn't be releasing them out in the... Shouldn't be releasing them. How I could just stop it. Release them. Shouldn't be releasing criminals because we're worried they're going to get sick. We should be reevaluating the justice system and finding a better way to punish people that actually reduces crime and doesn't increase the chances of passing infections back and forth amongst the prisoners there. All right. Meanwhile, I have a story here, another one from the Justice File. Now, this one has nothing to do with COVID-19 or the coronavirus or anything having to do with anything at all to do with any of that. And I didn't even know this story is hidden in the middle of the pile here. This would be the top story of the week if it were not for the media hysteria and obsession with COVID-19 and the pandemic. But it's not. In fact, it's barely been noticed. But the U.S. Department of Justice has indicted Venezuelan leader Nicolas Maduro as a drug dealing, narcotics trafficking. He's been charged with narcotics and trafficking related crimes. They have indicted Maduro and several co-conspirators. Let's see. They've offered a $15 million reward for information that leads to the capture of Nicolas Maduro. Now, how long has it been since America put a price on the head of state of another country? I don't recall that. Let me think. I can't recall that ever. Maybe the Taliban guy? I'm not even sure who that was. Maybe we'd put a price on the Taliban, whoever the head of the Taliban was. That's possible, but that wasn't a real state. Anyway, I just can't recall. That's pretty major geopolitical news that you would put a price on the head of a head of state. So there you have it. And then he put $10 million reward for information leading to the capture of the conspirators. And this is something I picked up from G. Gordon Liddy years ago. I wonder if G. Gordon Liddy's still alive. I have to look into that. You don't have to use the word co-conspirators, because conspiracy requires more than one person already. So a co-conspirator, that's a grammatical redundancy. You don't need that. You could just say conspirator, okay? So his conspirators should be shaking in their boots, because a $10 million reward has been offered for them. $15 million for Nicolas Maduro. And he's a communist murderer who definitely deserves to be captured and put on trial for the lives he has kidnapped, for the people he has murdered. He definitely deserves it. And like I say, if it weren't for the panic, this would be big news. And I say, this is great news. Shake your hand. View. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. And we go now. I'm gonna say it, okay? I think Matt Drudge should probably be arrested. In fact, I'm gonna take a week and not read his website. That's how frustrated I am. Because it's just every You know, there's probably 100 other media types just like him, too, that I don't pay as much attention to, who've promoted unscientific speculation and stuff that's just, it looks designed to drive the panic. And these people should be held to account. I mean, what was the, some of the headlines I saw this week were unbelievable this past week. Survivors can test positive again. We have no evidence that that's true. But there's rumors, and some people say it's maybe possible. So Drudge links to it in giant blood red letters. And then the virus may survive on surfaces for 17 days in giant blood red. And you got the daily body count, the daily infection count. And what was it today? Today, how many people are dying every minute in New York? It's just unbelievable. So stuff that is designed to keep people scared, panicked, frightened, stressed out, on the verge of freaking out. And I'm sick of it. And so I'm just going to find an other alternative news sources, and I am turning Matt Drudge off. You're done, Matt. Get out of here. You know, in 2017, the last year for which we have accurate data, about 56 million people died worldwide. That's about 650 people every second. And that can be made to sound really scary if you tracked it every day and put it up in blood red letters. But, you know, if you look into the data, it turns out that, I mean, your odds of dying in any given second are extremely remote. So don't panic and freak out. But for whatever reason, that Drudge has gone over the top on this. He's one of the main drivers of the panic. Matt Drudge should be held accountable at the end of all this for the fact that people freaked out and hoarded all the toilet paper and the margarine. What's with the margarine? There was no margarine at the store. Who's hoarding margarine? For crying out loud. I mean, at toilet paper, I can get my head around that. You know, I can understand in a panic.
Margarine, too.
But margarine, yeah. Anyway, Matt Drudge should be held responsible because this panic is killing people. Stress levels are going up. Older, infirm people are dying just from the stress of the panic. Somebody has to hold these alternative media sources and also social media. People are putting stuff on social media that is simply unbelievably irresponsible. This goes back to what I said a few shows back, you know, that the news is dead. The newspapers are all but dead. They're almost in the ground. The evening news, at least before this, this is like breathed some hope into the fact for an evening news since we're all trapped in our houses. But the evening news was virtually dead. And it is gone. It's all going to be replaced by social media. People posting stuff designed to get other people to look at it. And so it's just going to be, the potential for catastrophic incidents like this are only going to increase as the dissemination of so-called news becomes more democratized. And you got the average Joe who doesn't know anything about anything except maybe one thing that he does for a living. He's going to be commenting on the epidemiological aspects or possibilities surrounding a virus. It's ridiculous. You don't have any right to publish stuff like that when it's not based in anything real. All right. And another thing, if you're so scared of getting sick and dying that you're willing to upend 5,000 years of human civilization, upend everything, you're a coward, and you're mentally ill, I think. And you're certainly not qualified to govern or lead in any way if you're so terrified. The people who are qualified to lead are the people who take this opportunity to remind people that everyone indeed is going to get sick and die. Every one of us. And today is the day to turn to Jesus Christ for the only known cure. That's right. Talking science. That's right. He's proven the cure. He proved it in a clinical trial of one patient who died and then was resurrected back to life. So if you're scared of getting sick and dying, look to the actual cure. I mean, to forget stockpiling guns and ammunition. Come on. This is the time to stockpile spiritual wisdom and truth so that your heart won't fail you for fear, which is what's happening amongst our political leadership right now. Their hearts are failing them for fear. And then as soon as that happens and they panic everybody, then the greed kicks in. But anyway, forget the guns and ammo. By the way, any responsible adult who's made it past the age of, I don't know, 30, you should have enough guns and ammo on hand, just incidentally, to ward off the starving hordes for a respectable amount of time before they overtake your house and eat all your food and take whatever toilet paper you have left. If you don't have enough guns and ammo to hold off, I don't know, just grow up and get some, that's all. But stockpiling them, I'm not so sure. I'm sure this is not the time for that. Certainly not. And then there's the question, is this the end of normal? Is normal over with? Or the bigger question, is America over with? Is this the end of America? Well, I don't think this is the end of America. And I got a couple of stories, although it could be the end of normal. That's for sure. This could be a turning point in the history of the world that will be noted by historians, perhaps for 1,000 years. Yeah, that's definitely possible. But is it the end of America? I don't think so. It could be the end of the communist Chinese. The Chinese Communist Party. That it could be. In fact, I want to... let's go to Sweden first, because I can't find the story I wanted about the riots in Wuhan. Anyway, I don't think I have it. Maybe I didn't print it out. But the Chinese Communist Party lifted the restrictions on travel in and out of Wuhan province. And then all the people around Wuhan don't want people from Wuhan coming into there. And so the people in Wuhan have started rioting. And there are confrontations going on right now between primarily younger Chinese people and communist enforcers and police. And the thing about dictatorial regimes that rule by fear is that they can evaporate in a moment. And this is the type of moment that can produce that type of energy. That dictatorial regime that's been thought to have an ironclad grip on power for almost 100 years could evaporate in a moment and be gone. And everyone looks around and says, how did we let that happen? How did since 1948, how did we allow these people to hold us hostage? Anyway, it could happen. You know, and I hope it does. That could be another silver lining around this long, dark cloud that we're all under right now, is that the Chinese Communist Party is finally getting the challenge that they may not be able to overcome. All right. and now we go to the We Shall See file. There's a lot of We Shall Seeing going on out there, right? Because, hey, we shall see. That's a true statement. If we don't get sick and die. And if we do get sick and die, I'll get to see. I'll just be looking down on all of it. If I choose to, and I may not. But Sweden is keeping their schools open. Restaurants and bars are open. They're encouraging people to go outside. And there's a debate in Sweden over whether or not the government's doing the right thing. Restaurants were reportedly full last weekend. Buses have been packed at rush hour. While next door, Norway, they have almost California-like panic reactions, cowardly panicked reactions. Some of the most intrusive measures seen in peacetime ever in Norway, banning all sports and cultural events, shutting down schools and almost all businesses, just like Colorado, California. Yeah. Sweden has shut its borders to any non-necessary travel, but they've generally not freaked out and panicked. Now, they have encouraged people to, you know, the basic common sense stuff, wash your hands, don't touch things, don't go... You know, the stuff that we normally do when things like this happen. And so we shall see if Sweden survives or if the rates, the math at the end of the day will tell us if what Sweden did was right and if maybe we overreacted. I'm firmly in the this is a major overreaction. But we shall see. Okay. Now, meanwhile, the mayor in Denver has exempted liquor stores, pot dispensaries, and baby killers from the stay-at-home order. So if you're going out to sell liquor or marijuana, or if you're going to kill a child at a Planned Parenthood facility or similar abortion clinic, you are exempt because Denver Mayor Michael Hancock considers liquor, weed, and baby killing as essential. Yes. And so I hope this provides clarity. I hope this decision by Mayor Michael Hancock provides some clarity. See, what happened in Denver, see, is the mayor did not exempt liquor stores, pot shops from the order. And so immediately long lines formed. And lines are incredibly long now because everyone's 6 feet apart. I had to go to the bank the other day. The line went all out into the parking lot. One lady was almost hit by a car, for crying out loud. Standing out there. And so there's long lines formed. The mayor realized that people, well, I guess you see where people's priorities are. There wasn't a great big line in front of Planned Parenthood, though, because I don't think they ever shut it down. I think it's still going full steam ahead. An insight into the dark and wicked and evil heart of Mayor Hancock and all of the cowardly politicians who are driving the biggest freak out and panic and scaring of the masses in world history. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Thank you for sticking with us all until the end. Well, not quite the end yet, but we're headed there. All right. Some good news. Drew Brees and his wife, Brittany, have pledged $5 million to the state of Louisiana for relief efforts in the wake of the panic and the pandemic. They plan to deliver 10,000 meals a day throughout the state of Louisiana, specifically. They will be looking to feed children in meal programs. And so your heart's in the right place, Drew. And I'm glad that you and your wife are, I mean, $5 million. That's a significant donation. But what got me about this story is that there are so many children in meal programs, primarily in the government schools. And the schools are shut down. And so these parents have actually been trained to rely on the government schools to feed their children. Which is terrifying. That's another thing that this whole episode is going to uncover bad habits and bad and irresponsible behavior, and there's going to be an opportunity to repent and to correct that in a lot of people's lives. So don't rely on the government to feed your children, because what if something like this happens and suddenly the government locks you out of the place where they feed your kid, for crying out loud? Anyway. But that's great that Drew and his wife are ponying up $5 million. I wish it was for ventilators. I wish everyone could already feed their kids, but apparently that's not the case. All right. Now, from the Too Big to Fail file, the Bloomberg opinion piece here, the what the Fed has just done. The Fed and the Treasury and the Democrats and the Republicans and the president have signed off on a commitment to approximately $6 trillion in borrowing. Which, on its face, I don't necessarily disagree with that. Because if there's a crisis, sometimes you have to borrow a lot of money. Like we did in World War II. We had to borrow a lot of money. We had to spend a lot of money. And we wasted a lot of money. We wasted a lot of everything. But in a situation like that, it happens. But what just happened on a financial level, the author over at Bloomberg Opinion says that the Fed's cure risks being worse than the disease. We heard Donald Trump last week say, we don't want to make the cure worse than the disease, talking about shutting down the entire economy of almost the whole world. Now, he's since backed off that for some reason. I was hoping he was going to ride that. I like the whole idea of trying to come back by Easter, but apparently Easter's going to be the peak, according to the models and the math. And you can't argue with the models and the math, because until you're on the other side of it, you just don't know. All right. So what's happened is the Fed has set up the CPFF, the Commercial Paper Funding Facility, that buys commercial paper from the issuer. The PMCCF, the Primary Market Corporate Credit Facility, that buys corporate bonds from the issuers. The TALF, the Term Asset-Backed Securities Loan Facility, funding backstop for asset-backed securities. And finally, the SMCCF, Secondary Market Corporate Credit Facility, buying corporate bonds and bond exchange-traded funds in the secondary market. And then one more, the MSBLP, the Main Street Business Lending Program. That they don't even tell us what that's about yet. They say, we're going to tell you later, we're going to loan people lots of money. We're going to lend money to small businesses. And so I think anytime you create that many new departments, you're probably doing bad. Probably doing something you're going to regret. According to Bloomberg Opinion, the Fed will finance a special purpose vehicle for each one of these acronyms to conduct these operations. The Treasury will make an equity investment in each of these special purpose vehicles. And the Federal Treasury, that means you and I and our grandchildren, will be in a first loss position. So when these things don't work out, the first person to lose is going to be the government, not the businesses. So the Fed is acting as a banker and providing the financing, and they've hired BlackRock Incorporated to handle the administration, to do the trades. In other words, the federal government, perhaps, is nationalizing large swaths of the financial markets. The Fed is providing the money, and BlackRock will do the trades. In this author's opinion, the scheme essentially merges the Fed and the Treasury into one organization. Which, we didn't do that during World War II. So, I mean, this just seems like a bigger panic and freakout. Then I don't know if they panicked and freaked out this bad during the Black Death in the Middle Ages, the Dark Ages, I'm sorry, or the Middle Ages. The Black Death came along more than once. In fact, I've been reading articles about the plagues, many plagues that rolled across Europe and what happened. And there were panics, but I think it's the media. The media and the interrelated global trade now, because it's our technology, has turned the whole world into one entity. And we all rely on each other, we all serve each other, we all communicate with each other. And so we just happen to be in a position that if we are so scared of dying that we can be panicked easily, that we're just ripe for the greatest global panic freakout in all of history. And here it is upon us, and we're all participating. And I don't want to downplay the severity of the disease. I know that it kills people, believe me. I know that. And I would rather nobody dies, but we're all going to die, and people die every flu season. And so we have to evaluate, what's it worth to end civilization? Is it worth ending civilization because we're scared of getting sick and dying? I say no, it's not worth it. We need to find ways forward. And one way forward will not be Andrew Cuomo, by the way. I have an article here from CNN basically saying that because Andrew Cuomo has had an opportunity, not unlike the president, to give daily coronavirus pandemic press conferences, many Democrats are now seeing him as a 2020 presidential contender, even though Joe Biden has all the delegates in the phony baloney Democrat election, primary election. A democracy itself is phony baloney, folks. It's ridiculous. And it's events like this that make people realize that what we need is a man to lead us. We don't need the people voting on. I mean, I personally don't think I'm qualified to vote on who governs you, and I don't think you're qualified to vote on who governs me. And where did this idea come from that a concept or an idea is better just because more people believe it? Where did that come from? Because the number of people who believe something, that's not necessarily any indication of its validity, its efficacy, its morality. So anyway, democracy is stupid, and they can take the phony baloney Democratic election away from Joe Biden, unless he keels over first and makes it easier for everybody. They can take that right away from him and give it to someone who they believe might could actually win, who Andrew Cuomo appears to be that guy. But I dislike Andrew Cuomo a lot, but I'm not a big fan of Donald Trump, so, you know. I basically don't even have a dog in that fight. But I think it would be interesting, just from an observer standpoint, to see the Democrat machine. They probably convinced Joe to bow out and give his delegates to someone who could actually win. That's probably what they would do. But believe me, it would be a there would be some spirited, I should say, behind-the-scenes activities, including threats to Mr. Biden. By the way, sexual abuse, I haven't read it because I'm not interested enough in Joe Biden to actually read stories about it, but I see the headlines. He's been accused of sexual assault or misconduct in some fashion. Interesting that that rears its ugly head right at this moment as Mr. Cuomo is on the ascendancy. Another one here from the widespread panic file. A scientist who warned that the virus would kill 500,000 people in the United Kingdom has, he's now presented evidence that the death toll will probably drop to 20,000 people or even likely fewer than 20,000. So from 500,000 down to 20,000, that's big. Now, he claims that it's because of all this panic, the shutting down of the entire economy and locking everyone in their houses. But that's not really possible because that only started, that started too late to have any significant impact on the model. What author Neil Ferguson doesn't want to admit is that his initial model was flawed, is what it was. Let's see. And oh, he now also says he had predicted that the National Health Service there would be overrun. You know, we'd have people dying in tents in the streets. Now he says he's reasonably confident that the British healthcare system can handle the burden. Now, some areas are going to be stressed. There are going to be hospitals that do get overrun. I shouldn't say overrun. They're not going to have the capacity. But someone just sent me a picture of the Javits Center, the New York Convention Center in Manhattan. And it's basically been turned into a massive hospital. Thousands and thousands of beds on the trade show floor. It's pretty amazing what they've put together there. Let me get back to here. The scientist, Mr. Ferguson, credited the UK lockdown for stopping the spread of the virus. But the lockdown only began 2 days ago when this article was written, less than a week ago. And lockdowns take at least 2 weeks or more to actually work, according to the lockdown people, and I don't know who's doing those studies. I don't know that we needed to lock anybody down. That seems a bit much to me, but... All right, another one from the widespread panic file. Two professors at Stanford University have published an opinion article last Tuesday in the Wall Street Journal suggesting there is little evidence that the coronavirus would kill millions of people without a shelter-in-place order. the fatality rate of 2 to 4%... That's currently being, it's actually being theorized because we don't actually know. Well, Dr. Iran Bon David and Dr. Jay Bhattacharya say that they believe that this estimate is deeply flawed. The true fatality rate is the portion of those infected who die, not deaths from identified positive cases. So don't use bad math. We don't know how many people have it, so we don't know the death rate. And so, death from identified positive cases, they say, are misleading because of the limited data. If the number of actual infections is much larger than the number of cases, orders of magnitude larger, then the true fatality rate is much lower as well. And they say this is not only plausible, but based on our experience with other infectious diseases, this is highly likely. Look, China let millions of people leave Wuhan before we even knew this thing was going to be a problem. So this thing got, it was out and around the whole world within a matter of weeks. And it's been out there since December at the, you know, and maybe earlier. So anyway, just maybe some good news from the widespread panic file. More good news from the real science file, or possibly good news. A recent trial conducted by French researchers showed a combination of hydroxychloroquine and azithromycin to be effective in the treatment of COVID-19. This is Dr. Didier Raoult, MD, PhD, et al. In France. And he showed that in his first study, which was small, it was only 36 patients, 100% of the patients that received a combination of the two anti-malaria drugs tested negative and were virologically cured within 6 days. Now, were some of them going to get better already? Yes. So that's too small of a study. We can't take that to the bank. So he conducted a second study, this time 80 patients. Professor Didier Raoult and his team published now a new study, 80 patients, a clinical improvement in all but one 86-year-old patient who died and one 74-year-old patient who at the time of this article was in an intensive care unit. So now we have a cadre of 80 and 36. Can we do the math on that? 116 people that show this drug combination could be very promising. That's good news. Now, Drudge doesn't put that up in blood red headlines. No, no. Instead, he says it may survive 17 days. Let's see. For all the other patients in the cadre of 116, a clinical improvement was significant. And by the way, he used the word cured, which you're not allowed to use unless you actually defeat the disease, which is good news that we have at least finding some tools to fight the disease. The FDA, by the way, the FDA has issued an order loosening regulatory red tape on ventilators and how we can make them and who can make them. Allows for emergency use of certain ventilators. Anesthesia gas machines can now be modified to use as ventilators. And positive pressure breathing devices that the FDA determines meet specified criteria. Hey, look, in an emergency, the FDA has to admit that they're primarily redundant and overreaching. And that, anyway, I personally believe that by the time the curve peaks in, I don't know, 1 to 3 weeks, somewhere in there, in that time, we are going to figure out a way to make enough ventilators to save everyone who can be saved. I truly believe that because this is America. And in America, we still have the ability. Our heart has not failed us for fear, at least not all of us. Many at the top and many in the media and a lot of younger people who just haven't seen a lot and don't have a lot of experience, their hearts have failed them for fear. But a lot of the adults in the room, you know, we haven't. The people who already had the guns and ammo, we haven't. We're not freaking out. All right, finally, what do I have here? All I've got is this Fox Business article, and I don't even watch Fox Business Network. I don't even think I have it. Anyway, Trish Regan made a comment that the media coverage of the coronavirus was another attempt to impeach the president. She didn't say that the virus was a hoax. She didn't say that the government was overreacting. All she said was the leftist media's reporting on this was in another attempt to impeach the president, which I actually implied a week before she said it. Well, she's been fired by Fox Business News. Now, a Fox Business Channel, I don't even know what it's called. Fox Business Network, there we go. So I don't even know who Trish Regan is. Really don't care. I don't watch Fox Business. But her show's been canceled just because she stated something that was fairly obvious from the outset in the slant of the media's reportage on this. And apparently you are not allowed to speak the truth without risk to your career in this current environment in which we are in. And so, anyway, I can't lose my job because I run the show. And so my extremely attractive audio engineer could decide to let me go. If she abandoned her post, then I would be out of luck. But I'm going to speak my mind. I'm not going to panic. I am going to be healthy and well, as it has become. Apparently, that's the new thing. You have to wish everyone. I hope you're healthy. Well, I mean, chances are the person you're talking to on the other end of the phone, the chances are they're healthy. They answered the phone, okay? So I think it's a little ridiculous to say, well, I hope you're staying healthy. Well, of course I'm staying healthy. If I wasn't, I wouldn't have answered the phone. Now, what do you want to talk about? Let's talk. Let's get back to business. All right. Anyway, that's the Weekly Worldview for this week, folks. I want to thank Real Science Radio, right? And I want to thank my friends at Real Science Radio, my friends at American Right to Life, and of course my other brother Darrow, who makes it all happen. Here in the Weekly Worldview studio, should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.